We're planning on having one in Bend. It will be at the National Guard Armory more than likely. And what we do is you get vets that come in there, they get a medical screen, they get a dental screen, they get their hair cut, you know, they get supplies. Jim's program has been absolutely unbelievable in terms of accumulating material that we take out into these camps. High-tech sleeping bags, Army surplus winter blankets, tents, food, comfort items, warm clothing. The VA just does not have the kind of staff or, frankly, the funding to do outreach into areas like this. And this is a really major issue right now in the veterans community is the VA's, frankly, failure in many, many ways to provide services in rural America, where, interestingly enough, 44% of the veterans and active duty military people in this country come from rural America. Only 12% are from the urban areas where they tend to spend most of their money.
Which I want to, for our listening audience here, I know that COVO has been very involved in the homeless count out in Crook, Jefferson, and Deschutes County, not just of the vets, but the overall population. Give our listeners here in the Portland metro area some size of the scope of this problem and what exactly you're facing out there.
Well, this last year, we counted...
By the way, this is Ann Feliben. She's a retired lieutenant colonel from the Army. She was a combat nurse in Vietnam, and she's the president of our corporation. I'm saying that because she doesn't like to toot her own horn.
Amazing. Thank you, Stu.
And I don't go out to make rounds at the camps, but I am available for medical advice. But our outreach guy, Jim Gunn, does a phenomenal job of finding problems and getting them treated. But now with the homeless count, the first year we were involved in it, we were able, with the help of one of our homeless guys, to identify a number of homeless camps that they had never had the opportunity to see. And of course, we were still pretty new at that point. And I think that they tripled the number of homeless that they identified the first year that we were involved, and they doubled it this time. Because our people mostly go out to the camps. We have 42 to 50 camps with about 200 people. And as Stu said, there are families as well as single people. We have an educational component here, and they have 350 kids who are homeless, who are living out, and who attend the schools here in Central Oregon. So it is a major problem. We have families of five children living out in tents in Central Oregon. It's a major problem, and I don't think people have any idea. These guys stay hidden from the community. And so we've been able to shed some light onto that, and we've gotten a good deal of publicity, and therefore we've gotten a lot of contributions of sleeping bags and tents and that kind of thing. But the homeless situation is intense. The number of evictions out in Prineville, the St. Vincent de Paul social worker tells me that they have 1 to 2 evictions a week. And so those people have nowhere to go. There's virtually no shelter here. We have the Bethlehem Inn, which is going to move from where it is right now to a motel in town, and I don't think that they'll have the capacity. They now can have 200 people staying in the inn, but they will not have that. They will not have that capacity when they move. The other shelter available is with St. Vincent de Paul and Salvation Army, and they have a real limited number of vouchers. A lot of people, you see the people who are out panhandling, they can usually afford to stay overnight. They can get a motel. They can earn enough to stay in a motel, but they'll never be able to earn enough to get first, last, and a security deposit. So getting, and especially here where housing is so expensive, it's just very difficult for anybody to get a leg up without some real help. And that's what we're hoping to do. I mean, that's what we are doing.
You know, one of the things I think it's important, Michael and
Jay.
What's your sidekick's name?
Jay.
Yeah. One of the things that's important for people to understand is one of the things that we found out in the camps, particularly with families, most of these people, a lot of them, are working. And, you know, the problem here in Central Oregon is, as Ann just pointed out, first of all, there's a real lack of affordable housing here. And the number of units that are affordable are limited. So you can have mom and dad both working in what is essentially a service industry here, you know, making, you know, maybe a buck or a buck and a half over minimum wage. So, you know, their net income, it might be enough to buy food, and it might be enough to keep their kids in clothing, and it might be enough to put some gas in their car so they can get back and forth to work. But that doesn't leave any money for a place to live. And the other, so that this idea that, you know, that people who are homeless, you know, because of their own, because they're lazy or whatever, is just, it's just not true. And the truth of the matter is, again, there's a whole lot of people out there who, if they were honest, would admit that, you know, they could be one or two paychecks away from being on the street, particularly if they lose their job.
I'm curious, when did COVO start?
You know, we actually began talking about this around December of 2004, January of 2005, when Jim Gunn literally walked into a meeting of our chapter of Vietnam Veterans of America and said, "What the hell is all this I hear about homeless vets?" Because, you know, like many people, Jim, even though he's a Vietnam vet, didn't really realize the breadth of this problem until he saw something on TV.
So, and with the other members of COVO, all of you are people who have served yourself in the military, and many are highly decorated. Do you want to talk
Let me just correct that. We have two of our board members. We're not in the military, but interestingly enough, both of their sons are Army Rangers. One who's deployed to Iraq now, and one who just came back.
So family.
Yeah.
But talk about the background. I think one of the things that really impresses me is not only just how you came together as veterans, but also as highly accomplished community members in your own right, and basically said, we see a problem here. The VA is not capable or not stepping up. We're going to fill the gap.
Right. Before you say that, I'd like to know...
Talk about myself, and I'll let Ann talk about her and whoever else she wants to talk about. I did two tours in Vietnam. I was an explosive ordnance disposal specialist, which means that that I was on the bomb squad. I was wounded twice. I got a bunch of other medals and stuff. I came back, and I had my own problems, you know, as a result of my service in Vietnam. Notwithstanding that, I got a college degree, I got a law degree, I had an advanced law degree. I taught at Georgetown for a couple of years, and I'm an ex-public defender, and I retired in early 2003 as a member of the Oregon Capitol Defenders. I was an investigator that worked on death penalty cases for 10 years. And then, you know, when the opportunity came along to volunteer for COVO, it just, well, you know, I wasn't going to sit at home on my butt for the rest of my life.
And we have people who've been with the State Department for after they completed their military career, you know, in various positions with the State Department. Very accomplished man. We have a Marine who was a helicopter pilot in Vietnam who's a businessman and has been very successful in his business life and still continuing to find businesses to get into. Jim Gunn is our the outreach person, was a Marine combat vet in Vietnam, and he is a really accomplished artist. He's traveled all over the world. He went for a special project in Australia where they copied the glyphs that the the native, the Aborigines, Aboriginals made because they couldn't take photographs of them. So he made the pictures of them, and he's done a lot of our artwork. Jim has been homeless, and is a real. He's just a great guy. He just gives all the time. He spends countless numbers of hours going out around the doing stuff for homeless people. People call him up, and he deals with people with PTSD at 3 o'clock in the morning. Some lady, the Indian tribe up in Warm Springs, called him one night and said, "We've got a woman here who's homeless."
At 11:30 at night on a Saturday.
And he went out. He went to our storage locker, got tents, got blankets and everything, drove up to the Indian reservation, picked her up, and she turned out to be kind of picky about where she wanted to live. So he drove her around till about 3 in the morning to different camps, and she refused to stay in any of them. So finally he just had had enough, and he just left her off at one, didn't give her the choice. But that's a typical thing with Jim about how giving he is. Rob Bryce is now our treasurer, and he came home. He was an intelligence agent in Vietnam, and he went to school. He has 2 master's degrees. He was in biochemistry or biotech in worked in hospital labs, has been a great volunteer for a whole bunch of things since he arrived in Bend.
Handicap riding program. He volunteers in medicine once a week.
I'd like to ask, it sounds obviously Jim Gunn has been involved in this in quite a while. Was anybody else involved, or did this whole thing develop from his coming in and saying, what are the vets doing for other vets?
Oh, he was just the first one that came up with that. What had happened was we had an unfortunate thing where a member of the VVA here in town was murdered, and his wife said instead of sending, flowers and that kind of thing for the funeral, to give the money to the VVA. So we had a pot of money, and I guess we were sitting around trying to decide what to do with it, and Jim came in and said, "What's this I hear about homeless vets?"
Right.
But almost all the members of the VVA are a part, although they're not on the board of directors, they're very much involved, and they do a lot of work with the outreach with Jim.
Well, one of our VVA members who volunteers for us drove from Bend to Boise, Idaho today. It's 300 miles each way to pick up a guy we referred for alcohol treatment there who has successfully completed an inpatient program and is now coming back to be a resident in our transitional housing program.
Wow. Are you able to have a presence during the legislative session and advocating for rural homeless folks, particularly vets?
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I was at a meeting today with people from Greg Walden's office, who's our congressman, and about 6 weeks ago, there was a huge meeting with Ron Wyden and people from his office, people from the VA, people from the clinic here in Bend, people from St. Charles. Since November, with the election and the change of power in Washington, and particularly with the chairmanships of the committees, there's been a renewed interest in increasing the amount of money that goes towards veterans' issues. And the rural health care issue has become a really, really big issue. During the last Congress, there was a bill that sat in the House Veterans Affairs Committee called the Rural Veterans Health Care Assistance Act. And this bill would have shifted significant funding to rural veterans and medical assistance and mental health assistance and whatever else. And in the last Congress, without getting into which party it was, which I think your listeners can probably guess, this bill was never even debated. Now this legislation has been reintroduced. It's been introduced in the Senate. It has signers from both parties. And we're hoping that, in conference, this will all come together. One of the things that's already happened is that the new Congress has approved the bill. I cannot remember the amount of money, but it is going to give outreach money to the states And the states will then be in charge of this money and will give it out to whoever it is they think is doing outreach work. And, of course, we're hoping that we'll get some of it when it gets here.
Right. The thing that really interests me is that rural poverty has been largely invisible, way too much, whether it's vets or non-vets. And I'm wondering, say, up until several years ago, was the rural poverty problem and homeless vets, was that not accessible or unknown because of lack of outreach? Or what do you attribute that to? What's changed and what should change some more?
There's been a couple of measures that have been enacted in Congress, and one is I can't think of the name of it, but we do have a major homeless organization in Washington, D.C., that has started this 10-year plan to end homelessness, and that is going out in a lot of communities. Since then, there was a lot of research done about how much it costs for a rural community to take care of a homeless person, and they've done research and shown that some people, I think the $1 million, there's a man that cited as it was a homeless person in Reno, Nevada, that cost so much money. You know, people don't understand that when you take a homeless person and put them in jail, that costs the community money. When they get sick and have to be hospitalized, that's again another cost. And I think,
or they need ambulance rides 2 or 3 times a week.
Right. And so these things just came to be aware. I think that the homeless coalition here in Central Oregon has only been operating a couple of years, but it's been through organizations like that have started the awareness and started working on it. But it's really a hard thing to explain to people that homeless people are not some terrible scourge. We were originally, when we started, we had found a fire station that had been vacant for years. It was sitting out in a rural area. Beautiful. We just thought it was the most fantastic idea to put a homeless shelter and an outreach center for veterans out there. It was kind of a little bit remote, but there weren't that many houses around. The hue and cry from the community was just awful. I mean, we were told that we were pedophiles, that we were thieves, that the veterans. And so people have some really strange ideas about who homeless people are. And another group here in town tried to start just an overnight shelter for men. And this was in kind of a dumpy part of town. It was in an old mill, and again the NIMBYs rose up, and one of the things we did with our house, the house that we rented, we didn't tell anybody, so we just moved these guys in because we knew that the house was zoned for it, because the house had been built for an adult foster home.
The best part of it is that it's actually in a neighborhood where some of the people who kept us out of the firehouse live.
Well, and that's, you know, this gets to one of the issues that we have about 8 minutes left here in our interview, and it's always too short when we have a group like yours on. But one of the questions that I wanted to turn it back a little bit to the veterans, particularly because it smacks as very ironic to me in the community that you guys are living in, where there's an awful lot of cars with the magnets on it about support our troops. But here we have our men and women who have served, who do deserve the support, that aren't getting it, and you've had to step in. Talk about what you see as I know that at this point COVO is established. You have a transitional home. Talk about what you see as the next steps for COVO in terms of meeting the challenges of vets out in your area.
Well, the city of Bend awarded us a community development block grant, a pretty significant amount of money. That grant is going to be used as the down payment for the house that we currently rent. We've already got a mortgage commitment from U.S. Bank, who've just been really incredible about this. And we're in the process now of asking the VA for the money to actually pay off this mortgage. So we hope that by the first of next year, or maybe by the spring, we will actually own this house outright, which will give us an asset worth that we will own free and clear of about $420,000. And our long-term goal is to have in Central Oregon what Jim Gunn has referred to as a veterans campus, where, frankly, we'll be doing a lot of the things that the VA is doing. We hope that eventually we'll have our own medical program, our own mental health program. And then the long, long-range goal, I mean, I've talked about this, I don't know if anyone else has listened to me, is to become a Section 8 provider, to be able to build low-cost housing for veterans like they've done in San Diego and San Francisco and Los Angeles, where veterans are able to buy into the American dream and own their own home.
That's a tremendous vision.
I hope I live to see it.
Yeah. Me too. Well, you guys are working at a tremendous rate already. And do you want to talk about, isn't there an organization on the South Coast that has picked up from your lead and is thinking about doing something similar for veterans down there?
Actually, there are two of them. There's one called SOVO, Southern Oregon.
Southwestern?
Oh.
Yeah.
They changed the name. Southwestern Veterans Outreach, that was a direct copy of ours. And they've just opened a walk-in storefront outreach center now. I don't think that they've started planning anything about housing. But there's another vet down in Jacksonville, and we were talking one day, and I told him about our house, and he said, you know, my sister owns an adult foster home in Florence, and she wants to get rid of it. And so they're in the process of negotiating to take over her house as a transitional housing facility. And I've given them all our information and that kind of thing. So actually, we have two offshoots, and we hear that the guys in Burns are starting to think about doing something similar out there.
Excellent.
And we've actually gotten calls for advice and information from as far away as Georgia.
Well, I mean, this is an epidemic across our country. I mean, not just for the older vets who've been, you know, working to find their way psychologically and spiritually home for a while, but I guess...
Well, I just want to say, speaking of older vets, our first successful housing placement was a World War II vet who was probably within days of being on the street, 82 years old, combat medic at the Battle of the Bulge.
Wow. Wow.
And then, but we've also got Iraq war vets as our clients, and we just heard about a program that they're starting, a buddy program, trying to buddy up the new guys that are coming back home with...
Us geezers.
Yeah, and sounds like it's going to be real successful, and I think we'll probably pick up some people that we need to help through that program.
So you have something in place to sort of intercept newly returned vets from the Middle East to sort of help them as they start to deal with PTSD and all these other
they
things?
They just end up finding out about us and coming in. We get calls from their family who are concerned about them. And, you know, but, you know, the truth is, just as when we came back and we were young, it's going to take a while for these guys and women to, you know, want to come forward and kind of, you know, admit that they're having problems.
Right. They just had the stand down here in Portland, and one of the things I asked about was how many people did they get who were newly returned, and of course they weren't seeing many people. It takes a while for the PTSD to really manifest itself and all these other things like the brain trauma and all the problems. So I think it's terrific that you're you know, getting these guys when they're first coming back, and so that they know there's some place to go.
Yeah, and we've actually, you know, we've been to the National Guard facilities here in Central Oregon. When G Troop first came back, you know, we were actually invited down there and told these guys about what our services are, and we have seen some of these guys now.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a lot of guys go over to the Middle East?
One of my recent victories in a benefits claim was a guy who was a special operator for 26 years. And was called to active duty at the age of 50 and sent to Iraq. And this guy actually jumped into Iraq just before the invasion. And, you know, after he'd been back for a while, This is a guy who spent 26 years in Special Forces, and, you know, he ended up having the same kind of problems, and it took him a while, you know, to come to us for help.
Well, we, unbelievably, are about at the end of our 40 minutes. I want to give you guys an opportunity to talk about your website and give out your number if people have any questions of how they can contact you.
Our website is COVO, COVO-USA.org, and we have a special little thing there that you can press on and donate money to COVO if you're so inclined.
We are a tax-exempt organization, and donations are tax-deductible.
Well, and let me just
on
say...
On the phone number, 541-383-2793, and there's generally somebody here to answer the phone between 8:30 and 5.
Excellent. Thank you, Stu. Thank you, Ann. And please thank all your colleagues at COVO. What you're doing is really so tremendous.
Thank you for doing this show. We really appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. I think that it's when we see the level of sacrifice and then suffering that happens with these troops and veterans, somebody needs to stand up. It should be the VA. It's shameful that it's not the federal government in some way, but it's really tremendous that you guys won't just lay down and take it, that you're standing up and making a real difference.
Well, I'm just going to say one last thing. We live by two credos. One is you never leave a man or woman behind, and the second is we realized a long time ago, especially us Vietnam guys, that if we don't take care of ourselves, no one's going to do it for us.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much for being on our show. Good luck with that upcoming grant to get the mortgage to buy the house, and we look forward to having you back on the future.
Anytime.
Thanks, Michael.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. This is Marvin Gaye with, I forget what song it is, but it's Marvin Gaye. Help us out, Marvin.
Take us home.
Just getting back, but you knew I would. War is hell. When will it end? When will people start getting together again? Are things really getting better, like the newspapers said? What else is new, my friend? Besides what I read, can't find no work, can't find no job, my friend. Money is tighter than it's ever been. Say, man, I just don't understand what's going on across this land. Oh, what's happening, brother? Yeah, what's happening? What's happening, my friend? Are they still getting down where we used to go and dance? Will our ball club win the pennant? Do you think they have a chance? And tell me, friend, how in the world have you been? Tell me what's up. I wanna know what's in. What's the deal, man? What's happening? What's happening, brother? What's happening? What's happening, brother? Say it, man. Woo! What's happening, brother? What's been shaking up and down the line? I don't know, 'cause I'm slightly behind the time.
On May 14, 2007, on the cement steps of the Capitol building in Salem, Oregon, there was a rally to support the state's homeless youth funding. Attending this rally were 200 of the 24,000 homeless youth of Oregon, as well as their supporters. Through Outside In, some of us homeless youth were able to attend the rally and partake in speaking on behalf of the rest of the state's homeless youth. Our first speaker is one of Outside In's youth representatives.
To the members of the Ways and Means Committee, we deem it necessary at this present time to express our feelings pertaining to the current living situations of homeless youth. We have experienced what makes programs successful and what makes programs unsuccessful. As such, we have learned what is still needed to prevent long-term homelessness and what is needed to help others not as fortunate as ourselves. We are tremendously grateful for the governor's offer of $1 million. However, we are unsure that this can and will sustain homeless youth organizations in the state. We believe that on a state scale, $1 million is not enough to fully fund these services. It is for this reason that we humbly request the full $4.6 million. There are various services that homeless youth access that are in desperate need of funding. Some of the most critical services are the emergency and transitional housing. Transitional housing gives homeless youth a safe place to live. You are required to have a certain number of productive hours, which can include a job, school, making all of your meetings, and attending classes such as job readiness training. Some of the skills you learn here are keeping a clean and safe environment, budgeting, grocery shopping, and time management. Many youth also rely on the emergency shelters. Many of us have also been able to use education and employment programs to obtain and prepare for a GED, pay tuition, and buy books for college, and get living wage jobs. These programs also offer intensive work training programs and internships. The day programs provide meals, a place to wash our clothes, and staff who offer access to drug and alcohol counseling. There are still many gaps in areas that are underfunded. There are rooms, shelters, and cots that remain unused because the room has not been appropriated in funding. This has been a disheartening realization for many. The lack of homeless youth services in other cities and counties has caused many homeless youth to continuously flock to Portland in search of services. We lack the necessary funds and means to deal with these cases en masse. With appropriate funding, youth services can be provided within their own communities. We ask that you consider funding for homeless youth services not as entitlement, but rather as an investment. Thank you in advance for your speedy and careful consideration of this request.
There were also people from social services speaking on behalf of homeless youth.
Welcome to the first ever Capitol rally in the history of Oregon on behalf of runaway and homeless youth. I am Dennis Morrow. Many of you know me as executive director of Janus, but as she mentioned, I'm also the father of 8 children. I've had 2 of my children through life circumstances who have spent time homeless on the street, and one of them is the child of a homeless teen mom. And I'm proud to stand here today with you as a parent, side by side and shoulder to shoulder, committed to changing forever the way our state treats its lost children. On the other hand, I am not proud it has taken us over 30 years since the first documented report on runaway and homeless youth in this state to finally get ourselves here. I don't know about the rest of you, but for me, it feels good to stand here today, so good that we can forget how hard it has been to make this happen. I am proud to be here, and I'm proud to see the youth faces here because I know we need your energy. I also see a lot of adult faces who might join me in being not just proud, but tired. Tired of being studied as a homeless youth provider and a parent of homeless youth. How many well-intended reports can a single state generate without ever doing anything? We definitely have the world record on that one. I'm tired of being questioned by those who already know the truth but are afraid to look at the implications. I'm tired of answers we all know to be true being questioned. Yes, children are victimized. Yes, children are abused. Yes, children die on our streets and in our towns in this state every day. And I'm tired of a legislature that continues to debate if our children are worth saving. But being tired does nothing for children who today are depending on us to be their voice. I refer to our runaway and homeless youth as children, but oftentimes it's easy to write them off when we call them youth. We call them homeless youth or runaway youth or throwaway youth. That's like garbage youth. I don't know a single child that was born on the streets. There's really no such thing as a homeless youth. But every year in Oregon, we know there are only over 20,000 familyless children. So we no longer have time to waste being tired. Our children don't vote. They don't have a home or a way to get back to the one they have. They don't have a school or medical care or mental health services. In fact, they are the invisible lost children counting on all of us today to make them visible by providing a single, strong, united voice. And that is you. So I am not so tired as I thought. I am really proud to finally stand near the summit of a mountain we have been trying to scale for decades. I am not proud, on the other hand, that when we are finally this close to creating real resources for these children and youth, they once again are victims of partisan politics and budget wrangling. I am proud as a father today that all of my own children will have a safe place to sleep tonight. I am not proud as a father to say that hundreds of kids like them throughout this state won't. I am proud as a professional counselor that we have created an integrated system of services in Multnomah County for runaway and homeless youth that will reach over 1,000 kids this year. I am not proud as a counselor in this state that over half of those youth come from outside of Multnomah County because there are no services where they live to help them. I am proud as an advocate that we have a state legislature which last session passed a unique bill to ensure the child welfare system can't make kids homeless. I am not proud as an advocate that we even need to pass a bill like that. That is bull. I'm proud as a citizen in the state of Oregon that we have a bottle bill to protect our environment. I am not proud as a citizen to live in a state with no bill until now to protect children who flee violent, drug and alcohol infected homes. I am proud as a taxpayer to live in a state which will provide hundreds of millions of dollars to boost funding for children in our schools this year. I am not proud as a taxpayer to live in a state that can't even find a paltry $2 million a year for children who have no school. I am finally, as a person, proud today to answer any questions that a legislator in that building has. I am not proud to answer the same questions we have answered for 30 years over and over and over. Either they aren't listening or we aren't being clear. So I'm going to give you a little crib sheet before you go in there today. I'm going to give you three questions you're going to hear in different forms over and over, and I'm going to tell you what to say. Number one, when you hear how many runaway and homeless youth are really out there, I want you to look that person in the face and you say to them, isn't one too many? And then look them in the face and say, if it was your child, would it make any difference how many more were sleeping on the streets tonight? Number two, when you hear, why are those kids out there? I want you to say, do you think any child in this state voted to leave a safe, dry, warm home to worry about getting raped or freezing on the streets of Portland? And number three, when you hear one of the most popular questions we hear this session, what are your outcomes? You could say, we have a 95% success rate getting kids back home when they run away if we can get to them early, which is true. You could say we have over an 80% success rate, which is better than the school district and better than any system the state funds in returning homeless youth off of the streets into a life of their own. But say, how much is the life of one child worth to you? General Patton once said, in preparing his troops to enter battle, there is no honor in dying for your country. There is only honor in winning. Now, if you know George, he was a little more graphic than that, but that's the public version. I'm proud to stand here today surrounded by soldiers who care so much about this great state that you are willing to be the voice for children, most of whom you will never even meet. But I will not be proud if we go home today with anything less than total victory. And what does that mean for me? That means enough eyes from both sides of both chambers to win. Thank you.
Again, we have some homeless youth from outside in directly expressing their views. The first speaker just so happens to be myself.
We are also here to let everyone know that even though we may be homeless, we will not be forgotten. We are here not to ask for a handout or an entitlement, but to ask the state to think about fully funding homeless youth services as an investment. As citizens who will be most affected by the decisions here about homeless youth services, we understand the critical importance of budgeting the full $4.6 million. We will not be forgotten. We are here to remind the state why $4.6 million for homeless and runaway youth services is so important.
Homeless youth need safe places to sleep and eat. In this state, there are not enough services to meet the need. 90% of homeless youth have survived parental abuse and have run to youth services for help. On the streets, youth are faced with more influences, such as drugs, prostitution, and gangs. If not given the chance to succeed, most will fall into the cycle before the age of 18.
it is essential that homeless and runaway youth services be offered in more communities in Oregon.
Because people are continuously coming to Portland for services, and services are being limited. Due to some cultural restrictions, some are continuously left out of these services. And anyone over 21 is automatically being denied services.
If the state of Oregon is to truly invest in us, we need more intensive services, like education, employment, job training, and transitional housing. These types of services will allow us to transition off the streets and become self-sufficient. In addition, services like education will provide a way to save money on a longer-term scale, less prison, because we've learned to get off the streets. We've learned to do something with ourselves. Give us an education, maybe we can make a difference.
There were many powerful speakers at this rally. Here's my favorite, but I didn't happen to catch his name, and I apologize for that.
We're here on this May morning on the Oregon Capitol steps to bring sunlight to the need for resources on behalf of all of our children. We are here because we recognize that children do not vote, that there are no children's corporations, children's unions, or children-headed lobbying groups. We know that the address of children's issues does not show up in exit polls. It is not the stuff of ballot measures, civic pronouncements, or chain emails promising access to a fortune held in a foreign bank. We are here this May morning for the most invisible children and kids. Those unseen and unheard, we just call homeless and runaway children and youth. We can't see them, not because they're invisible, but because we're conditioned not to see you and them. No matter what, they just don't seem to be in the focus of our eye. These children and youth are not in our photographs of the Rose Court. Their photos aren't listed in the High School Athletes of the Week. And when we scan the papers for the winners of the spelling bee, those pictures aren't there. In fact, there's no Anderson Cooper special coverage on homeless and runaway youth. You won't see homeless and runaway issues on Lost, Desperate Housewives, Heroes, Dancing with the Stars, the NBA playoffs, Grey's Anatomy, or 24. Yeah. If Hollywood cares about the homeless, we haven't noticed. But neither has there been much mention in the soaps, in Broadway plays or musicals, or even in the Metro section of the newspaper. Homeless and runaway youth are not featured in Amber Alerts. You're not likely to see their faces on milk cartons, and they're permanently on the do not call list for urban planners, bankers, educators, ecologists, farmers, church officials, musicians, pilots, lawyers, or techno geeks. Whether these kids are couch surfing in rural Union County or taking their second winter under a bridge in southeast Portland, it is clear that so far we have made choices that do not include them. We have built budgets that hide their needs. We have created policy that drains their lifeblood, and our best practice promises them no future. So we stand here on the beautiful marble Capitol steps, or at least the concrete portion of the marble Capitol steps, on a fine May morning, the day after a worldwide celebration of Mother's Day. We stand here in the shadow of our own privilege, in marked contrast to those kids who have become the see-through garments of our society. We stand here on these marble steps where concern for others has been exemplary, but with desperate hope that our tradition as a caring people has not been lost. We stand here crying out loud to our elected neighbors inside this house to build a spirit of opportunity for the runaway and homeless. We stand here so that our voices together can speak up for kids who are not lost, who can remind us that they are still our kids. Yeah.
Coming back to Portland, we felt very fulfilled at having the chance to participate in the debate over Oregon's funding of homeless youth services. This is Shadow Silvers for KBOO Radio.
Thank you, Shadow Silvers, for that excellent report. Oh, very welcome, first edition of Hole in the Bucket. We look forward to anything you have for us coming up. Also, thank you to Aaron Yankee from the KBOO Youth Collective. You connected us with that story and you helped with the production. Wonderful story. And, of course, to our crack engineer, Sean Ongley, keeping it live in the main studio at the Boo.
Our own wood nymph. Thank you very much, Aaron and Shadow. That was really effective. And remember, listeners, leave no child behind, leave no homeless vet behind, and tune in on June 13th for the next Hole in the Bucket.
Good night.